This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest. Just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host, the man who's too good to stop for a roadkill deer to check it out, Mitchell Shirk.
Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman. I'm not going to be feeling too woodsman-like this week. This is the first time this coming weekend that I am going to the beach in over 10 years. I am not a beach person at all. I used to go down all the time to the shore and do offshore fishing with some family. I've been spoiled. I was able over the years to go just go bottom fishing, but I also got to go tuna fishing and shark fishing, and I've been fortunate to catch some bigger fish and have some really cool experiences on some larger boats and stuff, and that was my way of getting down to the shore and stuff. But like going to the beach, not my cup of tea. But my family got a beach house this year, and my wife and I are taking the boys down for just a couple days on the weekend into a Monday next week, and it'll be good to go. I'm probably due up to go and get my fill of sand to my rear end and stuff like that. But yeah, not really feeling too woodsman-like. But I tell you what, if you need a wake-up call or a reality check as you listen to this episode, launching on Wednesdays every week, you have 80 days until October 3rd. Just a mere 80 days, and October 3rd, Pennsylvania's archery season opens up. And that's not including the early openers and some of our special regs units. That's not including some of the other hunting opportunity available, whether you're dove hunting or small game hunting or what have you. It is closing in a lot faster than we would normally care to admit. And when you think about that much time, I had a million things I wanted to do before hunting season. I thought I was going to get a walkway done out in front of my house. I mean more of a retaining wall, fix that up. I was working on my basement, and I had had that really close to done. I have the finishing touches to do, stuff I've mostly prolonged and kicked the can down the road. Just need to take a day or so, and I would finish that up. I had outside projects I wanted to do, and I had hunting projects I wanted to do. Man, I thought I was going to get this blind that I wanted built and ready to go, and I had trees I wanted to cut down and paths I wanted to make and a food plot to prep and all that, and I did like none of that at this one spot that I have. There's always this list of things I have throughout the calendar year that I'd like to do before hunting season starts. And then once hunting season starts, I want to be done. I don't want to have any of that off. And I just added another thing to my list. My stinking pool at my house got a hole in the liner. And it took us 2 or 3 days until we figured out we had a hole in the liner. But the reason we had problems, we were getting water in our basement. Yes, I was getting water in my brand new basement floor that we've worked all year on. Now I'm going to have to, at some point, probably rip up the laminate flooring and dry out the mess that has occurred from this pool. So it's just a million, it just seems like it's the world's falling down and nothing ever works the way you want in that regard. But I did find it quite funny that I was talking about some of these projects that I had planned out, was thinking about my wife said, "And you're planning on doing that before hunting season," which was my way of saying she knows I don't like to open up projects during hunting season. So I didn't know whether to feel proud or ashamed. But yeah, lots of stuff going on. Here's another one that I wanted to do. I wanted to be a little bit more deliberate and focused on trying to get a little bit of weight off my knees and get in a little bit better shape than I am for this hunting season. Because last hunting season, there were some hurdles and hiccups that I went through in my physical ability to move around the mountains and handle the hunts that I do. I was able to do it. It's not like the world is falling, but it's a little harder. And I really thought, if I don't start doing something better in that department, it's only going to get harder. And I haven't done as much as I want. I'm not going to say I haven't done anything, but I haven't done as much to help myself in that department as I should. And I think that cues well into this week's episode. This week, we are speaking with a listener and an experienced fitness expertise. But it's somebody who's been a hunter. He understands what we like to do as hunters, because he does it himself. And he relates very, very well to the chaos of life and how to balance your physical capabilities and maximizing your physical quality of life to enjoy hiking to your tree stand, doing a drive with the boys, going small game hunting, carrying decoys into the duck blind, whatever that looks like for you guys. He knows a thing or two about. He's going to just share some of his experience as a fitness professional through the lens and perspective of a hunter. And I enjoyed this episode. I really enjoyed talking with Ken. I would encourage you guys, there's a good chance that at some point I'm going to have to pick Ken's brain and get some help from him, just because I'm not a fitness expert. I made this analogy before. I am an agronomist. I know a thing or two in the world of food plots, and I'm really confident in that. I'm a deer hunter. I'm a decent deer hunter. Like I would consider myself somebody who is seasoned and successful as a deer hunter. Is there room for improvement in any of those? Absolutely. But I'm a deer hunter. I'm an aspiring bear hunter. I wouldn't call myself a bear hunter. I think I got a lot to learn in that department. But, it's a species that I'm close to. I can put time into on a yearly basis and learn and get better as time goes on. I'm not an elk hunter. And that's kind of why I made the line to say, look, with the time I have in my lifestyle, I'm okay working with a guide to get some help, because I want to go elk hunting and I want to experience it. And could I figure it out? I think so. I don't think I'm too dumb, but I'm not an elk hunter, so I got some help, and I know diddly squat about fitness, and you know what? I don't know that at this point in my life I want to get carried away learning a million different things. I don't know that I have the mental capacity to take some more things in and learn it on my own and implement it successfully, but you know what? Somebody like Ken does, and Ken can take what I want to get out of life, and he can tell me how to do it and how to manage it effectively, and he understands the results and the timeline to meet expectations, and he's got motivation behind me working with him, something like that. And that could be you. That could be you thinking about how to improve the quality of your life in general, but also improve the quality of your hunting season. So enjoy this episode, and make sure that you do as much as you can, because, again, 80 days from the launch of this episode until opening day of archery season. Guys, do me a favor, and before you continue into this episode, hit the pause button. Go check out Little Mountain Outfitters. If you have things you want to get for this upcoming fall, they got everything bow hunting. And first of all, if you're within a reasonable distance of Richland, Pennsylvania, guys, drive to Little Mountain Outfitters. Check out their shop. Meet the guys in the shop. Get some help from them as you need, and they got a lot of gear and products and everything else that you might need this fall, and I encourage you to check it out there. But if you're not within a close distance but you still want to check out and support a company like them, go to their website, littlemountainoutfitters.com, and you can save yourself money. Save yourself 10% and use the code WOODSMAN10 and save yourself 10% off your next purchase at Little Mountain Outfitters. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Have a great week. All right, on the show with me today is Mr. Ken Wall. Ken, thank you for joining me on the show. What's going on?
Thanks for having me, man. Not a lot. You know, we're after the 4th of July. I was joking with some buddies last week, and like, I feel like after the 4th, it's time for fall.
100%.
I would totally punt on the summer to get to October.
Oh, preach to the choir, man. I said whenever July 1st happens, I cheer because I say we just got over the worst month of the year. June, I can't stand it, and July is not much better. But June is like the hump, and when I feel like we're on our way, you know, we're climbing up the roller coaster on our way to the fall and all the fun things that are going to happen when the weather starts cooling and everything else.
Yeah, my wife thinks I'm crazy. She's not much of a – she loves the fall but hates the winter. So – you know, it's kind of like the precursor. Like, why would you punt on summer? But man, I would give me 6 months of October, November, I'd be pumped.
Oh, absolutely. And to be fair, I mean, most women would say that the men in their life are crazy, but I think of that role can get easily reversed, right?
I'll plead the fifth on that one.
Smart man, you've been married for a while, haven't you?
Yeah, I got some years there, buddy.
Well, Ken, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Why don't you introduce yourself to folks who might not be familiar with who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so I'm a lifelong PA guy. I grew up in Wyoming County, Pennsylvania. I've been an avid hunter since I was old enough to bus brush for my dad. You know, 5 or 6 years old to chase rabbits out for him. So, my dad's still my best friend. We still hunt together, professionally. I've been in the fitness business for about 30 years. So the big fork in the road for me in my 20s is, did I want to go down the fitness, track, or did I want to go in the outdoor track? And I still look back on that and kind of go, which would have been better? My fear at the time was I didn't want my passion, which is spending time outdoors, to turn into a job. Mm-hmm. So, you know, looking back, it was probably the right call. So, you know, I'm 52. I've got two daughters, teenage daughters. So I don't drink a lot, which is shocking. but yeah, as much as I can, I'm outside. I'm, you know, I hunt, I fish, I do all that kind of stuff. And it's really where I'm most comfortable in the world.
So you brought up, you look back on that decision, you think, was it the right decision? You know, I think there's a lot of people that do that at some point in their life. And in some regards, I think about it too. You know, with the day job I have, I like my job for the most part, but there's times it's like, is this the right thing? Is you know, am I at a point in my life where I need to, you know, stay on the ship or jump off and make a decision in a turning point? So what are the things that you go through your mind at this point in your life when you look back on some of that? What are the shoulda, woulda, couldas?
You know, I think I've probably been a lot more settled than I've been. But, you know, being a business owner is hard. I'm a first-generation business owner. I've had to learn a lot on my own. And, you know, with that comes a lot of comes a lot of ups and downs. So, you know, early on, it was like, man, is this worth it? You know, I should just go get a job and be more stable and, you know, kind of remove a lot of those variables. Since then, I've realized, like, I'm doing what I should be doing. And, you know, the good thing about that is that I've been able to create more time to the things that I'm really passionate about. So, you know, when you work for somebody else, you don't get to say whether you get to hunt that afternoon or not. But, you know, after my business kind of matured to the point where I could kind of step away, it was like, listen, afternoons during the rut, you won't see me. So, you know, I think I probably always will go, well, maybe maybe I should have been a guide. Maybe I should have done that. But no, I like helping people a ton. So I think I've landed where I should be.
Absolutely. And what you do, I'm learning this more and more. With whatever you do in life, you can find a way to somehow relate it to hunting, because hunting is not just the pursuit of an animal and shooting an animal. There's pursuit, there's chase, there's challenge, and then there's camaraderie and fellowship. And you can link one little aspect of that to your passion. Somehow you have an opportunity to help somebody with hunting. Like, for instance, you know, you're in the fitness world, and what better way to help hunters than those who are eating a little bit too much fast food and on the go and need to do something a little bit better to keep themselves in shape so they can enjoy the falls that they want to be part of.
Yeah, that's really like my favorite client is somebody who's, you know, maybe got some aches and pains. They're a little bit over 50. And, you know, when I meet with them, they just say, well, I want to be able to get out with my son. I want to be able to keep doing the things that I do. I don't want to be the guy who is left back at camp because I can't do those treks. And that really tugs on my heartstring. Mm-hmm. Like my dad is getting a little older. He's still out there with me, but I want as many years as I can with him. Mm-hmm. So I would work with people like that for free.
Yeah. There's so many times with the job I do and like other stuff, like I would be a terrible business person in so many ways, because I just want to help people and I don't want to be charged for anything. But you know, how do you charge value and stuff? Nobody can work for free, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, so obviously what I try and do is just provide a maximum, like way over the top in terms of value, to make sure that I'm covering my bases from a cost standpoint. Sometimes it can be distracting when you get that guy in there that you'd much rather just sit and talk about, last year's deer season versus actually getting any work done. So, you know, that can be a little bit tricky, but yeah, I love working with that crowd.
So you brought up right in the beginning here, you brought up switching from, or making a decision into doing something in the world of hunting versus doing something in the world of fitness. And now 30 years as a business owner in the world of fitness, walk me through that decision to go down that rabbit hole. What was motivating for you to be in the world of fitness?
So most people find fitness as a career because they were really good as an athlete, or, you know, just found it easy. That wasn't me. I was a maybe moderately okay athlete the minute I started to get a little better than okay, I got hurt. So both of my knees, my shoulder, I had a lot of issues when I was a teenager, and I spent a lot of time in PT. But when I decided to go for, I was originally an athletic training major at Penn State, and I switched to exercise science. And what I found was I had the ability to relate to people who weren't necessarily an all-star. You know, they were more the average Joe and Jane who were just trying to get through life's humps. And while I've worked with a lot of high-level athletes, the ones that I took most pride in were the ones that I was able to change their life. And those were the people who maybe, you know, if getting up into their stand as an example was just something they couldn't do. They couldn't sit through an evening sit without their back killing. I'm keeping it to hunting here, but couldn't play 9 holes of golf, couldn't play with their kids. And when you're able to put a dent in that, like, that's truly life changing. So that's really what motivated me to be in the profession as long as I have. I still love doing that.
So when you think about the dynamic of people that you get, you know, 15 athlete, 20s out of college, and they're in the prime of their life, so to speak, and then you go through your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, your 60s, your 70s, if you make it that far, in your 80s, God bless you. You know, you see that dynamic and that trend of your body progressing. When do you often see people having the quote-unquote aha moment that if I'm going to continue to enjoy, do my life and enjoy the things that I do to this capacity, I need to do something to better myself in the off season? When do you commonly see people say something to?
Unfortunately, it's usually after something bad happens. Or they see something bad happen to somebody else. So like the example I always use is like, we all watch our parents age. My generation is really one of the first that's been kind of like pushing back on the whole aging route. We grow up watching people lose their mobility and independence, and they just chalked it up to getting older. Now we know that you can kind of push back on that. So, usually though, it's like they have a scare, like whether it's a low back injury that makes them realize that they're mortal, or, maybe it's a cardiovascular event, or they see that happen to somebody else. Like my favorite expression is, we should be training now. So not just for today, but how we want to be 20 years from now. So most of the people I work with are between 40 and 60, and that's what they have in mind.
Mm. And when you start working with people, I heard somebody make I was talking with a family member here, and they were somewhere in their 50s, and they said that, they started going to their doctor and coming up with a plan and how they could make their life a little bit better, a little bit healthier. And they said they had reached a point in their life where, they went to the doctor in their 30s and had the documentation of how much they weighed, their 40s, their 50s, and there was a trend of slowly gaining a little bit of weight over the years. And now you're in your 50s and you make a decision to say, do I want to continue on this trend? Because if I continue on this trend into my 60s and 70s, my quality of life could really, really diminish. My knees are going to struggle, my back, my overall enjoyment of life. And this was a pivotal decision that I could really change the course of how the rest of my life lives. So many people probably wait too long. So my question to you is, when's the right decision?
When is the right time?
Yeah.
The right time is 10 years ago. The next right time is today. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of like I always use putting money away for retirement, right? We know that we should do that as early as possible. Most of us don't until, all of a sudden that reality gets a little bit sooner. But just because you're late on something doesn't mean you should not do it at all. So, ideally, I want my kids to understand how to take care of their body from the time they're, they're teenagers now all the way through life. That would be perfect. That would be the ideal. But short of that, there is no, the sooner the better. Mm. But that said, make sure that you're not letting the ideal get in the way of improvement.
Sure.
I don't know if that makes sense.
It absolutely makes sense. Yeah. So keeping this in the lane of hunting, getting up and down a tree stand, climbing up a ridge, being able to stay with the drive, going out with the group of people that are younger than you, whatever it is that you get to a point where you're like, this isn't going as easy as it used to. And people say, all right, now it's time I need to make a change. I haven't made a change. And you're starting out and trying to make some life changes. What are the most common things that people say were the reason that's like you ask the question, how did I get to this point? What are the most common reasons or excuses that people talk about in this situation?
That like for not starting sooner, like what got in the way?
Well, getting to the point where you're like, how did I get to this point where I can't keep up? Like I didn't do a good job of whatever, exercising, eating right, or stuff. Like, what are the often excuses for or reasons that I just wasn't living the most healthy lifestyle up until this point where I'm making a decision to change?
Priorities change. So we were talking about it before we started the recording. What you're able to do in your 20s when you're responsible for yourself changes pretty dramatically when you've got a family, when you've got a job, when you have a business. So you're already like your allotted time diminishes pretty dramatically. The other thing that happens is once you get away from it, especially if you're somebody who worked out on a regular basis before, the idea of going back to what you did before seems daunting. So you don't do anything. You know, it's kind of like, well, if I can't do what I did when I was 25, then it's not worth doing at all. I hear that all the time. And that is a hurdle that we have to overcome. Just because you may not be physically where you were 20 years ago, you are still way stronger, way smarter, way more adaptable than you were when you were 20. We just tend to focus on where things have slid, not how we've grown. And the plan has to change. You can't go back and, you know, do the stupid things you did when you were 25 in the gym and not able to move for 3 days because you have responsibilities now. You know, I'm sure if you were so sore that you wouldn't be able to work the next 3 days, your boss wouldn't be able to wouldn't like that very much. So,
you know, you talked about catastrophic events happening that makes people make those decisions, almost like a sense that they're forced into it. You know, you talked about a cardiovascular event or, busted up shoulder, back, a knee, or something like that. And it's usually a lot of time it comes down to I'm not exercising and I've got a weight problem, right? And that, unfortunately, I don't know what the statistics are. You probably do, but I feel like more often than not, the older you get, the higher that BMI is going to get. And it's a massive challenge to pivot and make a decision before something happens. So what's your advice to somebody who in the back of their mind says, yeah, I'll worry about that later. I got this. And I don't know how to jam pack it into my schedule right now to change my eating habits, or it's such a job to change my eating or, you know, working out. Like, I don't know how to do anything that's going to be of value to you. Like, how do you encourage somebody in a situation where they're really not at a catastrophic point, but they're going down a road that's not going to be good for them?
They got to start smaller. So, like, you know, I'll use nutrition, for example. A lot of people tend to think, well, if I'm not going to be perfectly on track, then it's not worth doing. Guys, especially, you know, we don't want to follow a food plan. We're usually very busy throughout the day, but it doesn't prevent us from having one good meal a day. But we focus on the idea that if we're not perfect every day, then it isn't worth doing. Fitness, the same thing. 15 minutes a day, I'm a big, especially for the older adult, I think there's a lot of power in working on flexibility and mobility, especially for guys. Taking 15 minutes three times a week and just working on that, you're going to feel dramatically better, and it's going to make you more likely to want to do more. You don't need to spend 2 hours in the gym 5 days a week in order to get benefit. Myself, you know, I've been doing this 30 years. I work out 3 days a week for about 50 minutes. And I'm active, you know, the rest of the week, but like my structured training program is that. So when people say, I don't have time, well, you have to have time for something, like even if it's a couple minutes a day, how do we do that? Versus thinking, okay, what's going to be perfect and going for that.
Life changes are always very, very tough. And I think with the lifestyle that we often bring, like I'm guilty of this. I'm guilty of saying I'm too busy for stuff. And really, your time is followed by your priorities, right? Like whatever your priority is, that's where you spend your time. So, I mean, I've really done a diligent job of trying to put that into family and my kids and my job, and of course hunting. That's a huge part of them. I mean, that's part of why I devote, you know, a couple hours a week to doing this and bringing good hunting content to it. But I find myself too where I don't have time. I don't know when to make time for that. That's changing this and that. But I also know that I waste a lot of time and sitting on my butt at a time and I'm relaxing or on my phone or watching TV or something like that. So you brought up that 15-minute mark. I've heard multiple people talk about 15 minutes and being mobile. And like 15 minutes doesn't sound like a lot for me. So how do you encourage somebody that to say there's a metric that I feel like there's a progress? Because 15 minutes just is like, man, 15 minutes, like that's nothing. That's it doesn't seem like I'm going to do anything for myself at that.
You know what it's more than? It's more than zero.
It is.
So, and I mean, I wouldn't be able to rattle off the data off the top of my head, but there's study after study, like even from a cardiovascular standpoint, that talks about 10-minute walks, like being like dramatically decreasing the likelihood of cardiovascular events, especially like after meals. Now, but see, you're showing me how that's wired. Well, if I can't, you know, if I can only do 15 minutes, it's not worth doing anything at all. You know, 5 minutes of 5 minutes of mobility work, 5 minutes of some basic strength work if you know what to do, and then 5 minutes of getting your heart rate up. Is it ideal? Probably not. Okay. But is it better than nothing? 100%.
Mm-hmm.
100%. So yeah, like getting over that mental hurdle of like letting perfection get in the way of improvement is step one. You know, and listen, man, I'm in no place to judge. I'm holding up my cell phone now for people on the podcast, but these things are big time sucks.
Yes, huge. I'm guilty of it myself.
Oh, totally. Totally.
It's hard not to, and that's why I brought up the priorities. And I think that's one of those things you don't realize how much time that you take away from yourself. And I think if you added up the time, and I guess there's probably things on some of these phones where it would track how much time you spend in certain apps and times of the day and stuff, and you add that up over a day's period, it's actually kind of scary.
All right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost spring and summer planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed.
How much time we lose, and this is getting it on a tangent. It's really not related to what we're talking about. I seriously think when you start talking about people and like, man, it's July 8th today. Can you believe how fast that 2026 is going by? Time just seems to go by so fast. And I personally believe 100%. A lot of the time when we say that, it's because we're filling it with these things like a phone screen, and it's making time go faster. We don't have boredom, so time goes away. It seems to go away faster.
That is a total rabbit hole, but one that fascinates me. So I think our attention spans are getting smaller and smaller. So like for my business, I do some content creation, and it used to be that you said that you had 10 seconds to get somebody interested in whatever it was you were going to talk about. You know what that is now?
Two seconds.
2 seconds. And I mean, think about it. Like if you're on your device, you're just ripping through it, right? So, you know, you're scrolling as fast as your thumb can move. And that literally changes how your brain works. The other thing that I think it comes up is like when you're talking about training programs, right? There is a decent amount of work that you have to do before you see any kind of result. That makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in a world where everything is instant on a phone or on a laptop or on an iPad, that gets harder to understand. Like, what do you mean I have to wait for gratification? Because now everything is super fast.
Yes.
You know, I do some food plot work, and every year when I redo a food plot, I take pictures, you know, right after we till. Week one, nothing seems to happen. Week two, maybe you've got a little bit of growth. Week three, not much. But then, you know, 4 or 5 weeks later, depending on the weather, you've got something that you can see. That's how nature works. And I always share that, you know, share that content, and doesn't get a lot of traction because people are like, nah, man, give me to you quick and dirty. But like, that is more supposed to be how things work. It's supposed to be a slow burn over time, not digital. And with all the AI developments, man, it's only getting harder and harder.
It's all getting harder and harder. And one of the things that's getting harder and harder with this, so like you talked about instant gratification and stuff, like I think it's hard sometimes to dig down and have the willpower and the discipline to fight that in order to go through stuff. And there's a lot of people that, you know, smarter than me that can go into the science behind that and just talk about just say no to certain things. But it's still really, really freaking hard. And there's no getting around it that it's hard to deviate, to get away from that and pursue things that, but you and I both know, because we hunt, you know, hard work into stuff, there's way more satisfaction at the end of the hard work. And there's other aspects of life that that's true as well.
Totally. So, I mean, as much as I try to be successful in the woods, I measure like my seasons by my ability to be out for extended periods of time without all those distractions. So, you know, like if I'm able to hunt in a spot where I don't have cell phone service, that's a great day. Cause you know, it's a whole day where I'm not dialed in, and you know, that used to not be a concern, but for most of us now it is. Like I'll admit I've been busted in a tree stand because I was looking at my phone when something came in, you know, would that have been a worry 20 years ago? No, it wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I measure seasons by my ability to get out and disconnect from all that kind of stuff. Of course I want to be successful, you know, I like getting big bucks like everybody else, but for me it's more about that unplug and connect to nature more than anything else.
Absolutely. So here we are in July, hunting season, depending on the part of the state that you're in. And of course, you know, for folks that listen to this show and know anything about me, I never talk about anything other than the big game species because that's just how my mind is wired. But let's just say sometime in September, you could start doing stuff in the world of hunting, whether that's small game, whether you're in an early opening season that opens 2 weeks archery season before like 5C, 5D, and 2B. Or you're waiting until that, you know, opener of archery season real close to October 1. So we got some time that you can make some difference, I'm sure, if you say, look, I want this hunting season to go better. I mean, you brought up something earlier that I think is crucial, and is not knowing what to do, or is like having a clue of how to get started. And obviously, Ken, that's where you come into play. So just walk me through somebody that's in that position, says, I want to do something, but I don't know what. How, like, where do we begin?
Yeah, so when I meet with a client, the first thing I want to do is I look at how they move. So I think what happens when, especially with guys, we tend to swing for the fences. So I'm gonna throw a 30-pound pack on my back, and I'm gonna go hike uphill, but they forget the fact that their knees kill them, that they've got a hip issue and they've got low back issues. So rule number one, when you try and do something to improve your fitness, is you don't get hurt by trying to improve your fitness. So overly simplistic advice would be, if it hurts, don't do that. Cause you're only going to set yourself backwards. And that's where that dangerous should thing pops up. Well, I should be able to do this. I'm just going to work through the discomfort. I'm going to work through the pain. It hardly ever goes that way. You end up setting yourself back further. The other thing I spend a lot of time on in the beginning, especially with guys, is making sure that they move well. So can we get the right joint to do the right thing at the right time? How is your ankle mobility is a big one. I don't know about you, man, but I spend a lot of time in just very low, like minimal shoes. The first time I put boots on in the year, it's a pretty rough walk. Because I lose my ankle mobility. How strong am I in a single leg? Like, it isn't necessarily about training to go on a hunt out west and hike 10 miles a day. It's, can I get to where I want to go without falling down? And the older you get, the more that matters, because the older you get, falling down is a big deal. So can you move well? Number one. Two, do we need to get stronger? Especially, I would argue, in the lower body. Like this time of year, everybody's shooting their bows. Cool. You know, that I get a lot of questions on how do I improve my upper body strength so I can draw my bow better? And that's fine. But how's your lower body? Can you handle uneven ground without losing your balance? How's your core strength? A lot of low back issues come from core strength. So I'm being really broad here, but those are the things that, that matter. And it was the reason why I wrote the book that I did. I wrote a book called Hunting Beyond Limits. And basically what it does is it breaks down really what I think is the ideal game plan for somebody who's over 40 and wants to train the right way without going backwards in any way because of an injury.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. So where do you want to go from here, Ken? Because there's so many other, there's so many rabbit holes in this. And I feel in the hunting world, and even myself, like I get overwhelmed by the amount of content and stuff that's out there about getting better. And it's sort of don't like, it's so macho man egotistical in the world of hunting as it is, let alone putting in physical, you know, activity and stuff. And it seems like, you know, if you're not, like you just brought up earlier, if you're not putting the mass weight on and hiking 10 miles, you're not doing anything. And that's really, really, again, I keep going back. It seems like it's really, really hard to overcome that mental part of it. So where do you want to go from here in this conversation? Because I feel lost myself in a lot of aspects with it.
Okay. So I think what struck out when the last thing you said was comparison. So I'm a little bit of a mindset dork, and I think we can maybe spend a minute there. If you've ever heard the quote, comparison as the thief of all joy. So you have to be able to let go of what you did 20 years ago. Here's the little dirty secret on that. So if you were a gym person in your 20s, okay, chances are what you were doing that you thought was good in your 20s wasn't that good for you. You just had more capacity to recover. Like the analogy I always use is, you know, most of us have had some party years back in the day. We could go out on Friday night, drink way too much, and on Saturday morning we'd wake up and we'd be good to go. Now if we do that, it doesn't go so well. Okay. Usually not. So training was the same way. We'd be able to beat the crap out of our bodies, but because we were young and resilient enough, it wasn't that it was necessarily good for you. We could just hide it with a capacity to recover. As you get older, that capacity diminishes. So because people try and chase what they did before and they don't have the capacity to recover, they actually end up setting themselves back. So in an effort to go further forward faster, it ends up actually taking more time. Does that make sense? So it is 100%. It is a little bit of the tortoise and the hare. We want to with our approach, we want to be a little bit more like the tortoise, because people who are successful in fitness are the ones who stick with it. It's just like time in the woods, man. I don't know how many times I ended up getting a buck weight in archery for no other reason than I was out there. Like dumb luck, but I couldn't be successful if I wasn't out. You know, fitness is the same way. The people who do it the best are the ones who do it continuously over time. To be able to do that, you can't do things that set you backward.
You brought up a pretty important word there, and you said mindset. So we're talking about working out our physical bodies, whether it's upper body, lower body, yada, yada, yada. How do you improve? I'm trying to think of that. How do you exercise a mindset and improve a mindset? Because we talked about it earlier. We're wrapped up in phones, and we get ourselves into toxic places in our mind. And that's a part of fitness too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of reps. One quote I'll probably butcher, but you know, if you do any food plots, you know, weeds grow on their own. Okay. Negative thoughts are the same way. It's a lot harder to focus on what's going right than it is on what's going wrong. Mm-hmm. Like if I asked you, give me 10 things that aren't going the way you want it to, it'd be really easy for you to kind of fire them off, right?
Yeah.
But if I said, give me 10 things that are going well, it would be harder, and 4 or 5 of them would feel less than authentic. Like you'd be answering just because I asked you for them. So it's honestly a matter of repetition. So like I know for myself, like I like to pay attention to current events, but I can't let them consume me. So I limit how much time I spend watching the news. I limit how much time I spend doom scrolling is what I think the kids call it now, right? Because the more you do that, the more it gets wired in. So then you have to find things that push you in the opposite direction. So I like listening to your podcast, man. That puts me in a good mental state because I'm spending time thinking about what I really enjoy doing.
You mean so, people listen to this? No, I'm just kidding.
I know you at least got one.
Well, I appreciate that, Ken. Yeah. Sometimes it feels like you're talking to yourself, but no, I appreciate that.
No, trust
that,
me,
Ken.
Man. I know. We do it. We're doing this for our own entertainment at the end of the day, right?
100%.
So, but no, since I'm sincerely spending more time on things that kind of fill your cup versus empty it, big difference. Big difference. Limiting some time around maybe some people that you have the ability to kind of shy away from because they're just constantly pulling you down. And that can be really tough, especially if they're family members.
Right.
You know,
it can be very tough, but making a decision, I think that's the biggest thing. You got to make a decision. I'm going to do something. And then the consistency. Right. Absolutely. You know, one other aspect to this is too, I mean, I hear all kinds of statistics and stuff about the food that we eat now being not as nutritious as it was years ago. And of course, we're living in a fast paced life and so many people are getting the grab and go type stuff, processed foods, gas station, mini markets, you know, all that stuff. And like compounding over time, I think there's a lot of research out there that links us to, you know, brain fog and cancer and all kinds of wild stuff. And it makes you think that if you're not doing everything perfectly, if you're not growing a garden and making a sourdough starter and doing all these things, that it's a waste of your time. But you had brought up earlier that one good meal a day is a great place to start. So let's just shift and just talk about what we put in our bodies to maximize our goals. How do you get somebody started based off of the craziness that they have in their life in that regard?
So biggest thing is I like to meet people where they're at. Okay. So, you know, to your point, like if somebody lives on the road and fast food is say 10 meals a week, and I'm just picking an easy number, right? Me telling them that they can't do that anymore, that they've got to live on alfalfa sprouts, carrots, and tofu.
Yeah, good luck.
Is not going to go well, right? It could be correct, but it's not going to move the needle at all. So sometimes just getting that person from 10 times a week to 5 is a victory, right? So like to get them to go from 10 a week to none is probably a bridge too far. So small changes over time always work better than here's a food plan, follow it to a T. There's always a few outliers that works for, but what ends up happening with them is the minute they go off, they go off. And they end up worse than when they started. So what I like to do is I like to turn the dial just a little bit. Alcohol is another one with dudes, right? I'm a beer guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if somebody tells me they're having 3 drinks a night, if I get them to maybe 2 for a couple weeks, that's improvement. That's a 33% improvement. And it doesn't really rock their world because, again, we're in this for the long haul. I don't want anybody to feel like they're on a diet. Nobody sticks with that. So, but if we turn the dials a little over time, they're going to see improvement and they don't realize, and they'll end up not really missing as much because nobody likes to be told you can't do something. I know I don't. So if you say, dude, you can't have a beer on Friday night, I'm probably going to call you a name.
Well, and the other thing too, like, and I've done this myself where you get motivated to dive in and you go as hard as you possibly can and you run the risk of at some point in time experiencing burnout. And that happened to me a couple of years ago. Like I went really hard in, you know, doing some, you know, calisthenics and improvements, and I was rucking more, and I was, you know, active, and I was really paying attention to macros and this and that. And it just got to a point where, like, I didn't know when I was going to fit the time into meal prep. And then that, you know, I felt like, well, I didn't do it right. So now I'm back to the, oh, I'm not doing it right. I'm not going to do it all. And you just, it just collapses in on you. And then it makes it even harder to start up because it feels like it failed. And I'm really glad you brought that up because little things over a long point. I think about seeing improvement for this hunting season. But I think the way you just worded that to me is making a decision that's not only going to be a net positive for this hunting season, but it's probably a bigger deal for hunting season in 2027, maybe even bigger than 2028. And I never really thought about it like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we all want, like, now, can a 12-week transformation program work? 100%. You know, and there's people that do really well with that. Like, so I guess this is probably important to mention. So if you have a lofty goal, okay, like if you drew a tag out west and you knew that you got a big gap between where you are right now and to be able to physically go and do that hunt, then the approach has to be different. But most of the guys that I know, that's not the case. They just want more seasons in the woods. So because of that, the approach has to be more based on consistency than intensity. Does that make sense? So
makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So I'm very interested in making, you know, the guys that I help with, and some women too, enjoy more this year, but I also want them to be 10 years, 15 years down the road. Obviously, you know, Mother Nature is undefeated. Mm. Like, it always wins, but we want to extend the game as long as we can.
That seems to be, yeah, we seem to try to defy that on a regular basis, right? So think about let's just talk about hunting in the Northeast, because again, when a lot of people, when you look at stuff that's out there and trying to improve it, a lot of it is a lot of the fitness type stuff that you see in the hunting media, the hunting industry, it does seem like it's really heavily geared towards the Western hunts and mountain hunting and, you know, being able to backpack in and, you know, carry out game and carry gear and stuff like that. Pennsylvania in the Northeast has some unique hunting opportunity that just creates different physical things. And sometimes it's climbing a tree. Sometimes it's stalking, crawling on uneven ground. You know, one of the things that I think a lot of people that are from the West that don't realize about the East is the vegetation and the way that our ground is, like, it's uneven ground and stuff. And that's really, really tough. So aside from just going on walks, aside from rucking and, you know, putting a backpack on, what are things that stand out to your mind as a Pennsylvania hunter, whether you're climbing up a ridge and climbing in a tree stand, or you're ground hunting or something, that just makes you twist, move a little bit better, you know, for all the little nuances that we have in our hunting style here?
So from like a fitness standpoint?
Yeah.
Hands down, single leg strength. Single leg strength. Like, how can you, what's your ability to kind of stabilize on one foot? So most of the training that people do for lower body is always with both legs at the same time. So squatting is a good example. Mm-hmm. Leg press is a good example. Leg extension, leg curl. But very small amounts of our time in the field is spent on two legs. When we're moving, it's always on one leg. So your ability to have good balance and not roll an ankle, not twist a knee, not hurt your hip, has to do with being stable on one leg. So, you know, we could geek out on the actual exercises that go along with that, but having, a lot of people say my balance isn't the best, and there's like the brain component of that, right? Like your vestibular system, all that kind of stuff. But there's also having good mobility and having good strength will go a long way in that capacity. So, you know, speaking as a guy with two bad knees, like, I got that early. You know, I need to be strong on a single leg so I don't, you know, damage my knees any more than they already are.
It's funny you say that, because I've been in a couple situations where walking quiet and specifically placing my foot at the right location that a rock didn't go, or I didn't, you know, shift my weight too hard onto my toe versus my back foot, because if I went too hard on my toe, I might crack a stick in a certain way, or I might just, you know, be wanting to move super duper slow and I'm putting weight on my foot and I'm on uneven ground trying to go to the next step. And if I don't keep my balance, I'm not going to plant my next step at a location that's right. Going to be too appropriate. That's a really, really good point.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a huge fan of, in the beginning, things like controlled step ups and step downs because it's going to teach you not only how to use the big mover muscles in your leg, but also the stabilizer muscles in your hips. So the way I always explain it is everybody thinks like lower body. They think quads, hamstrings, like your thigh muscles, the back of your thigh. But the steering wheel for the leg are the muscles in the hips. And that's what works when you do things on a single leg. Mm-hmm. So big fan of that kind of stuff. I will take single leg exercise over heavy leg presses and heavy back squats any day of the week. Unless you plan on putting a 220-pound buck on your back and squatting with it, there's not a lot of point in heavy back squats for the average hunter, in my opinion. I know other people might feel differently there. But how much of that is really working your ego versus working what you need?
Yeah, no, I've done plenty of ego drags over the years in some crazy places, and I've learned it's a lot easier to cut the deer into pieces and give it to someone else and have them carry a section of it.
There is very few things more humbling than dragging out a 200-pound buck that always feels the need to go downhill.
They always
when
do.
You hit them.
They always do. Is that because we always hunt at the top and hope that they stay on top and they're just forced to go down where nobody else goes?
I think it's their last bit of spite, personally.
That could be that. There could be a lot of things. What about, sometimes, I've had shoulder problems, and some of that's from previous football injuries and, working through injuries is really, really tough. I want to be able to shoot my bow effectively, and when my shoulder's hurting, obviously that can't. So sometimes I've thought about, how do I know I'm doing something right without re-injuring it? You talked about that a little bit, but could you shed light on that a little bit too? Because a lot of times people do come with some kind of, hand tied behind their back.
Yeah, so we'll use your shoulder, for example. Okay, so usually with the shoulder, it's pressing motions that are going to be more painful than pulling, right? So as an example, if you're doing barbell bench press, it's usually going to be harder than if you're doing a row. Am I safe in assuming that when your situation? Or?
I'm trying to think, Ken, because mine is on the back, connected. I have a pain that shoots from my neck down through my shoulder, and if I pick something up, I'm just a bullhead, and I'll just pick it up with my shoulders. And it won't necessarily hurt when I do that, but when I'm done, I can get a lot of pain that radiates down. I can do push-ups all day long, and I don't usually feel too many problems.
Okay. So that actually maybe sounds a little bit more like a neck issue.
Yeah, I guess technically maybe it is. It radiates down my shoulder, so I say shoulder.
Okay. So, yeah, in case of a neck thing, how you pick up something from the ground matters. Mm-hmm. So posture is a big deal there. So you hardly ever want to pick up anything with rounded shoulders. You want to think more about that, nice, tall, you're going to get in a fight. For people listening to the podcast, they can't see us doing that right now. But good posture. You want to think about being tall versus being short and being rounded. In terms of working around injury, there is always something you can do. It's just a matter of finding the right movement for that particular movement pattern. So I was using the example of barbell bench press. A lot of times that kills my shoulders. I haven't done that in forever, but dumbbells don't hurt. If dumbbells are painful, doing something standing with a band or a cable often doesn't hurt. And the same can be said for pulling. So number one piece of advice is if you're trying to do something and it causes discomfort, stop doing that. Okay. I'm happy to be a resource in that capacity. And at the end here, I'll give people a way to contact me. But, there's lots of good information just on a Google search about different ways of training certain body parts without pain. But training through pain is never a good idea.
Right. So, Ken, I've really enjoyed everything you've shared with us. You've shared a lot of your knowledge and experience in this. And one of the things I was hoping you could do for somebody is if somebody's thinking about doing something and they're consuming a bunch of content and they're trying to make a decision on what's right for them, how do you know when somebody is giving good advice in this area or in this area, and when somebody's not necessarily giving you the best advice for making these changes that we've talked about in this podcast?
Man, that is so hard, especially in 2026, because everybody's got a megaphone, right? So, I mean, you know, I'm going to sound old here, but I'm 30 years into this. So, like, I see Instagram accounts of people who probably don't coach anybody, offering their opinion on stuff. So one thing I would say would be to do some research on whoever it is that you're thinking about falling for advice, and try and find instances where they're actually working with people. Because in a social media age, you could be in your basement and not have any people, not have any clients, offering opinions, just like somebody who's been doing it for a long time and been working with a lot of people. That and, you know, ask for reviews, like see what people's track records are. The unfortunate reality is that for somebody who doesn't have a background, it's all going to sound the same. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, you know, look for people who have a track record of actually working with people. And usually you can find that out on some social media platforms and on Google, things like that. But then ask your doctor, ask a physical therapist. Who do you like? I have relationships with orthopedic docs, family practice docs, physical therapists. So they know that I can work with people who have some stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are others like me that can do the same. So like use those resources. But yeah, you definitely have to do your diligence there, because I get it. Like, we all sound alike.
Absolutely. Well, Ken, I'd like you to do two things for me three things, but the two main things before we close this out and you kind of let people do, I would like if you could tell us, a success story of either yourself or somebody that you worked with that, you know, was in a place where they needed to do something, they were up against the wall, but, you know, came to the end successfully in the world of hunting.
I'll use a guy named Mike. I've known Mike a long time. Mike and I started talking because he was having a lot of lower back issues. His son was turning 12. He was really worried that he wasn't going to be able to get out with his son. And, you know, I mean, we've all remember what it's like to be 12 years old and, you know, the first year and that whole thing. It took him a little while. We had to overcome a lot of the same things that you and I were talking about. Like, well, you know, this is what I did before and it worked for me. Why isn't it working now? Is it worth it? Like, you know, but in about 9 months time, just in time for his son's 13th year, he was good to go. Now, would he have survived a trip out west? No, but that wasn't his goal. He wanted to be able to be out with his son. Son was able to get a deer. They got it on film. Very cool. And when he sent me that pick, it was a basket rack 6-pointer, you know, but to each of them, it might as well have been a 200-inch deer.
Right.
And he's still out with his son. Like that's really the thing that I like, working with hunters, is just more time in the woods with people they care about.
100%. Well, the last thing I'd like you to do is talk to me a little bit about what you're looking forward to with this upcoming hunting season and whatever that capacity that might be.
More time in the tree, man. So, full disclosure, I got a decent 9-pointer in rifle season last year. 2 days later, I saw the biggest buck of my life when I was out on a doe. I had doe tags. Hunting with my dad that morning, and he decided to pack it in for the day, and I went to another stand to sit till dark, and sitting in a blind, and I saw a giant. he was pushing one legit 160.
Wow.
So I haven't seen any evidence of that deer on any of my cameras yet, but you know, it was very late in the season, and I never had him on camera last year either, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't think about that deer. But more importantly, it's time in the tree, unplugging and, you know, getting out as much as I possibly can. My bar's pretty low in that capacity.
Yeah, that's a good thing. You know, I've seen glimmers of that here, even for me at times. Like last year, there was a couple of sits that I did, and I never did this before until last year, where I either didn't take my phone with me, or I put my phone in my backpack and like forced myself that I would have to get it out. Normally it's in my pocket and, you know, I feel it buzz and it's, you seeing anything?
Yeah.
You know, what are you seeing? What's going on? You're getting close to prime time. Like I turned that off. And the other thing you brought up too was like the no service thing. And that's probably why I'm getting more like my dad and going to camp and not having service. And so, you know, not being able to be connected to the world when I go out and spend some time in the woods. Now, I don't know about this whole thing with some of these new phones and being able to text via satellite. I feel like it might ruin it for me. But I guess I'll cross that bridge when I get there.
Here we are trying to get disconnected and they keep making it harder.
Yeah. Everybody wants a piece of you, Ken.
It's tough, man. It's price popularity, right, Mitchell?
Well, Ken, this was a lot of fun. Thank you for coming on the show.
I appreciate you having me.
Can you please link us in some way, shape, or form of how people can get in touch with you if they have questions or would like to consult with you?
Yeah, so easiest thing to do right now would be to go to huntingbeyondlimits.com. From there, you get a free copy of my book, okay, a digital copy of my book. And my email address is on there too. So what I did with the book, and I know not everybody is a digital fan, it's available on Amazon. Honestly, my goal with doing this was not to make any money. I wanted to be able to bridge my passion for fitness and helping people feel better and my passion for the outdoors.
Mm.
Really, totally a passion project. I'm not looking to monetize this in any way, shape, or form. I just want to hang out with more people like me. So digital book is absolutely there for free. The other thing I did is there's a resources pages on my website that breaks down all the exercises that I mentioned in the book. Because it's one thing to read about something. Okay, this is how you do something. But it's pretty hard to understand. So when you go to that resources page, it's huntingbeyondlimits.com/resources. Every exercise in the book has a video that goes with it. There's some sample programs there. There's a meal planning blueprint. So everything I mentioned in the book is there for a resource. And then if people want to reach out, it's info@huntingbeyondlimits.com. And those emails go straight to my ever-connected phone.
Ever-connected phone. Ken, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, man.